Welcome to JGL Law For You. JGL Law For You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law For You, we will be discussing a wide array of topics to help you navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Everyone, we are back on JGL Law For You, and also back is my good friend and law partner, Chris Castellano. Chris, who has been practicing law for over a decade and is now my partner here at Joseph Greenwald & Lake, and we're here to talk about something that is particularly topical this time of year, and that is, how do you manage the holidays if you're separated, if you're divorced, or in the midst of either? So there's a lot of problems that arise this time of year. This is when folks that do the work that Chris and I do like to stick our heads in the sand and pretend that we're in the Bahamas somewhere, but that generally doesn't happen. So Chris, let's start from the top down, and we want to talk about how to keep the holidays peaceful, at the same time memorable for our families and for our children. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back here, David, as always. And yeah, I mean, this topic, especially during this time, is so critical, and it's so easy to lose sight of this when people are, you know, struggling with their spouse, the ex-spouse to be, or their ex. And, you know, it's a difficult time because the holidays heighten those emotions. But as you rightfully point out, it's about focusing on the kids and allowing them to create the memories that they need for their childhood.
And I want to talk more about this later, but you also, when we talked about this discussion earlier, it's also trying to maintain family traditions, right? At the same time, you know, when you have two households, which can also be difficult, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, traditions at its core is creating those memories for the kids, right? For that next generation, so that generations to come still have that tie back to family, to the cultures, etc. So, you know, when we look at that, it's important that at its core, it's stability. It's allowing the kids to enjoy that level of stability. And if parents stray too far away from the focus of stability, what you end up doing is hurting the kids in the long run. So consistent with the idea of what's in the best interest of those children, it is, how do we maintain stability? How do we maintain traditions? How do we maintain the ability for these kids to create these memories during the holidays?
Okay, so that dovetails into, let's talk specifics in terms of the hot button areas where the holidays can be challenging, can be stressful for parents and families.
Yeah, so let's talk about, I guess, families that have not yet entered into an agreement. I think that's fair, right? We are in the midst. Maybe the family, you know, one spouse or the other filed a domestic violence petition in October, or a divorce petition's pending, and we don't have any immediate resolution. The first step is to go ahead and identify the holidays that we're talking about and who values them, quote unquote, at a higher level versus the other parent. And I think that that's important because it allows that parent, the one who values it a little bit higher, perhaps Thanksgiving, Christmas, what have you, it allows them to be the one that's ingraining those traditions with the kids. The most important part of that, of course, when you're talking about the nuts and bolts, is communication. Because again, we don't have an agreement in place. And so it's about communicating clearly about the kids in a simple way. Perhaps this has been the schedule that we've been abiding by informally. It's going to require a bit of flexibility, a bit of a change, but this is what we think is in the best interest of the kids. And that communication shouldn't come at the last minute. It should come about 3 days before a holiday, ideally.
Or even before, right? Ideally, it's well in advance.
Oh, yeah, optimally.
If one parent wants to travel with the kids, or if one parent has family coming in and there's a lot of stresses between the two parents, don't necessarily want the co-parent there at the dinner table with you. So ideally, you talk about this well in advance. I mean, 3 days sounds good, but by that time, somebody could be on a plane coming to visit and one person's buying a turkey and the other thinks that they're taking the kids out to a restaurant for dinner or something like that.
Well, that's right. I mean, so when we talk about this, don't wait to the last minute. Do it as soon as you can. Communicate as soon as you can. If it comes down to it, I don't want you communicating the day before. like David says, right? I want you at the very latest 3 to 4 days, but let's communicate weeks in advance.
So there's a lot of stress in terms of scheduling. People are going to have disagreements, particularly if there's not something in writing. But assuming they get to that point where they figured things out, is it important to, and I know this might be age specific, but is it important to let the kids know, here's what we're doing. You know, we've talked about how we're going to handle things. You're going to do this for, you know, Thanksgiving Day or the first half of the weekend, and you're going to do this for the other half of the weekend. Something along those lines. Isn't it important to communicate that to the children as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, establishing what the calendar is going to be and look like for the kids allows them to be able to anticipate what they're going to be looking forward to. You know, you don't want to catch them out and surprised as well. They have expectations. David, you and I have done these cases. You've done it for longer than I have. And I think that what I've recognized, and I'm sure you have as well, is that the parents, they recognize the importance of traditions, values, etc. for the kids. But I think that what goes unrecognized and unidentified is the kids' expectations. A kid's going to look at Thanksgiving. What are they looking at? They're like, I want to sit at 9 o'clock and watch the parade, right? I want to be able to smell stuffing cooking in the kitchen. You know, what they don't want to be doing is driving 2.5 hours at 10 o'clock in the morning down to mom's grandparents' house, right? So it's important to establish to the kids what they can expect so that they're not disappointed, because I tell you, the moment they get disappointed, their minds aren't fully developed. So they're going to start lashing out in ways that you don't anticipate.
So let's talk about, since it's close, the closest, let's talk about Thanksgiving specifically. I mean, this is not a 10-day, 12-day, two-week break from school. This is a long weekend, essentially, you know, Wednesday to Sunday for many. And kids, some kids in private school actually do have the full week off. But let's talk about Thanksgiving specifically and what, if any, particular issues this presents to parents and their children.
Yeah, so Thanksgiving, thankfully, it's a secular holiday. So we can set aside that complication, but it's a middle of the day holiday, right? And what I mean by that is you've typically speaking, the meal is going to happen at around, well, I don't know about you, David, but typically it's like a 1 to 3 o'clock meal, right? It's one of those wonderful holidays that doesn't really make sense insofar as the timing is concerned. What that does is that introduces the complication of what are we doing with the holiday? Where are the kids going to be? And so, you know, what the lawyers like to do in a lot of agreements is perhaps both parties value Thanksgiving heavily. And so they say, listen, I'm going to get the first half of the day. And then at 2 o'clock, the kid's going to transition over to the other parent for the second half and maybe part of Black Friday. Ideally, that could work, but I mean, you know, you're going to have to balance that with a lot of other expectations of other guests. You know, for me personally, I'm going to a house with 20 chairs being seated, right? And so you can't exactly tell them, hey, guys, I know you want the turkey now and the stuffing while it's hot, but you got to wait until I can get my ex-wife to bring the kid over, right? You know, that starts to get complicated. So again, communication is key. You got to establish that expectation with the kid, establish it with your spouse, your ex-spouse, what have you, and really identify it. But of course, the simpler approach, which a lot of our agreements also have, is you're alternating the years. You know, some people have Thanksgiving on an odd year, some have it on an even year. So if you have that established agreement, read the agreement. Read it. Read it well in advance of Thanksgiving. I can't tell you how many times, David, I've had people to call me up and I say, well, when's the last time you opened up that PDF? When's the last time you read that agreement? And then they think, oh, geez, Chris. Well, actually, this is an odd year, so it's not my Thanksgiving.
Doing this for as long as I have, and December is going to be 39 years. I don't know why I keep bringing that up, but I'll be starting my 40th year of doing this work, which is
maybe longer than some of the folks listening have been on the planet. But I have sort of found what you're talking about are the two better options, which is not splitting the day in half, because that in theory does exactly what you just talked about, which is, okay, they're with me from the morning until 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mom or dad comes and picks them up, drives them down to Virginia where the family's had, so they're an hour in the car on Thanksgiving Day, which can be traffic-y in the D.C. area and certainly other urban areas. And you're plopping these kids in the car, taking them away from maybe cousins or others to go drop them someplace else. So my experience has been is where people either alternate the entirety of the weekend, which is, you know, Wednesday after school to Sunday in the evening, or they split it in half like you were talking about, which is, you know, maybe Wednesday after school until Friday. So that way, the parent who doesn't have the Thanksgiving can do their Thanksgiving on Friday or on Saturday. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think the kids care that it's Thanksgiving Day. I think that most kids just want to be with their families. And so if you're having a second Thanksgiving, right, don't you think that's a better approach than splitting the day in half?
100%. When you are in this situation in your life, flexibility is key, and understanding what the net gain is to the kid, right? Are you going to have a Thanksgiving Day parade on a Friday? No, you're not. And it is what it is, right? But you're likely to still have football on, right? You're likely still have a lot of those traditional Thanksgiving items present. And then you can go and create your own mini traditions on that Friday to make it feel like a unique day. You know, maybe that's a lot of people put up their Christmas decorations the day after Thanksgiving. You know, you build your second Thanksgiving around that concept if you're splitting those holidays. There's a bunch of different options.
Yeah, that's a terrific idea. I mean, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's a very good idea. I think also, you know, what I've encouraged people who are in their off years, you know, so you have split the day or split the weekend, is that, you know what? Tell your family that you're celebrating with the kids Thanksgiving on Friday or Saturday this year, right? A lot of times families will adjust, you know, only have them every other year, only have them this part. People are worried, oh, well, my brother won't do that or my sister won't do that. Their family wants to do. But oftentimes I've had these discussions with folks over the last 39 years. And more often than not, for anyone listening, families are willing to adjust. Now, sometimes they can't or they won't, but oftentimes they are. And asking, right? Asking is not a bad thing. And this way, the kids get to do what you're talking about, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. Most people put aside their, I'll be harsh and say their selfish desires about how they want to see something happen. And they recognize that the greater good, if you will, is for the kids that are involved.
This is a bigger discussion, not just Thanksgiving, and I want to get to the winter break and Christmas in a second, but it's requiring an adult to think and act like an adult.
That's right.
Which sometimes is not so easy. I mean, it's not about our feelings. It's about six-year-old Tommy's feelings. Let's turn to the bigger break, the Christmas break, although there's not necessarily the religious aspect, although there may be in spring break if Easter is important to folks. Let's talk about how to manage these longer breaks where people might want to go on vacations. Again, I think we should talk about spring break as well, although there might be less of a secular piece to it for many people.
Well, that's right. Let's just briefly talk about spring break because I think that's fair. And a lot of people's agreements do require establishing that by, let's say, January or even December 31st. So I think it's fair to talk about that now. Spring break, I find to be unique. Some public school entities versus private school entities certainly have a different view. If you're in, you know, some of the northern states, you even have other breaks. I don't know if you're aware of these. I'm sure you are, but the ski weeks, right? Where you have off in February, early February. And so you start to have to balance a lot of these different breaks. But with spring break specifically, it could be less than a week. So again, that theme of flexibility is so necessary because you can't anticipate if your spring break is going to be curtailed due to snow days or what have you. In addition to the complication of whether one party or both are religious and whether there's certainly as the kids start to get older, the familial requirement for the kids to be involved in any religious or going to church or what have you. And so then that allows us to dovetail back into winter break, because I think the same requirement exists there, right? First and foremost, that holiday break, regardless of what, at least for us in Montgomery County, MCPS wants to call it, it's going to start with Christmas, right? It's going to start with Christmas, and you've got Christmas Eve. And your first question, the question that I have to clients when figuring out this holiday schedule is, okay, what are we doing insofar as who values, and I use that word lightly, who values that holiday first and primarily, right? Is one parent the one that's going to take the kid to church, for instance? Is that an important value to them? Who values putting the kid to bed for Christmas Eve? And who values them having Christmas morning, whether it's opening presents Christmas morning or brunch or breakfast or whatever it may be, right? And once you start to identify that, it allows us to then go ahead and craft a scenario where, okay, maybe we're doing that thing where, you know, one party on even years gets Christmas Eve, the next party gets Christmas Day, or maybe we split Christmas Day at 12 o'clock. Ironically enough, I find, at least in my own life, Christmas Day, well, I have young kids, and so, you know, you have nap times at around like 12:30. And so all of a sudden, Christmas Day for me in the last 6 years has gotten at 12 o'clock. It's just like a ghost town.
You take a nap too, Chris, or is it just the kids?
I need to start taking more naps at 12 o'clock. And so it does seem to be a more, at least for me, I'm sure it's the case for other people, that 12 o'clock can become somewhat of a quiet and natural transition time to where you can then go into a Christmas dinner at around the 3 or 4 o'clock time period. And so kind of similar to Thanksgiving, although I do find that Christmas allows for a bit more of a transition in the middle of the holiday, ironically enough. Then you look at the rest of winter break. And this is so complicated. You look at this year, right? Our calendar for this upcoming winter break in Montgomery County, Maryland, it includes kids go back to school January 5th. When you do the whole division of, okay, well, you know, this year they get all of, we'll split up Christmas and then, you know, one party gets it during the even years and the odd years. You can't do that, because now you're talking the last couple days of the winter break are in the straddle between an even and an odd year, which is why I don't like to do that in my agreements. I've experienced that too many times where I don't do that. So, you know, it's about identifying what the days are and then going with the two holidays, Christmas and New Year's, and then dividing the days in between those two.
And a lesser problem, before I get to specific issues, more specific issues as to the Christmas / winter break, are the families that may have one child who is in private school for one reason or another, and the others are in public school, and therefore the dates vary, right, for their particular breaks. So it seems to me that that's another place where people can bump heads and could use some assistance from someone like you to try to navigate that, not only this year, but also in years down the road.
Yeah, it requires a lot of creativity. Creating an effective custody calendar for people and families requires creativity, rolling your sleeves up and getting into it. Because, you know, if you just take it as a, you know what, parent A gets even years, parent B gets odd years, and then we'll just split up the holidays and we're done with it. We're not going to get into the minutia. Well, except that the minutia matters to people, right? And matters to the kids. And again, going back to what I said and how I opened it, those expectations that the kids may have that a lot of times gets ignored. You need to get into it and you need to have an attorney, frankly, that's willing to dive into those details and really start to understand, you know, your family's particularized needs.
You know, I think you just hit on a hot free tip. You know, people pay us for this tip, but we're going to give it to them at no cost. And that is, don't get tied up, right, in getting the deal struck. It's easier, as you said, okay, alternating holidays, odd years, even years. Stop and think, right? Stop and think, what does that mean exactly for my family in 2025 or 2026? What does that mean for me? Look and take a moment, because a lot of us lawyers as well, right, are looking to try to get this thing signed, sealed, and delivered. And to many lawyers who, and some who don't have children, I liken it to an oncologist who's never had cancer. So one who has, I'm not saying doctors should have cancer, and I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but it does give you an added understanding of what your patient is going through. Just like if you have children or have had children and raised children, that gives you an added understanding of what you have to think about in these types of deals, don't you think?
100%. I'm a firm believer that perspective is something that is sorely lacking in virtually every area of our society right now. And so I think it's most certainly applicable in our field. Like I said 5 minutes ago, right? You know, I'm sitting there on the couch on a Christmas day at 12 o'clock because kids are sleeping. They're napping, right? You only really understand what that's like when you've understood it, when you've experienced it. And so you can offer that option to parents. Now it's past us, but you know, when you talk about Halloween, you only understand what the importance of and what trick-or-treating actually looks like with kids, and not just hearkening back to your own memory when you were a kid, but you only understand that when you have that perspective of kids. And so that's how you can understand how to divide these holidays properly.
Well, it's interesting. I had a case. The lawyer on the other side did not have children. And I made some remark, which was, of course, inappropriate. I tend to make more of those as I've gotten older. I made some remark that Ms. Blank, we'll leave that this person blank, obviously doesn't have children. And she responded to me, "What difference does that make?" This is in court. And the judge who's on the bench said, "I think it does make a difference."
Yeah, I think you're right.
That in part led to a good ruling for my client, but we'll skip over that. I want to talk a little bit about the two sort of specific areas of conflict when it comes to winter and Christmas break, or any other, at least in partial secular break as well. And the first is gift giving. Isn't that an area for you and your clients to sort of talk through and make sure that they and their co-parent communicate about?
I think that's fair. Certainly in the last 10, 15 years, it's become, as the electronic devices become more ubiquitous, I think it's become a concern of maybe one parent that's a little bit more sensitive to screens, if you will, than the other. You know, it's about communicating based on the age of the kids. Hey, what do we think is appropriate insofar as, should I give this kid a tablet? Do they get the phone, the smartwatch, the gaming console, whatever it may be? I think that that's certainly a valid discussion. But to be honest with you, David, I'm not going to sit here and say that parties should communicate on the smaller items, right? I think on your big item that has some substance, I think it's absolutely appropriate to talk and establish expectations and make sure, especially if it's an item that's going to go back and forth between the houses. Yeah, talk about it. Do you have to talk about what you're putting in the stockings? No.
Well, here, let me ask you this question, though, because this has come up multiple times for me where people are, usually they're divorced and have been divorced for some period of time. And one parent is now in a different financial circumstance than the other. So, hey, I can afford to get little Christine a X, whatever X might be, an electric bike, or pick something that costs a lot of money, or I can afford to give her many, many gifts. The other co-parent says, well, I can't do that. So, of course, the kids are going to want to spend more time at the other parent's house because they're lopping thousands of dollars of gifts on top of them. I can't do that. It doesn't seem fair to me, and it puts me in a bad position. Is that a discussion that you have had with your clients over the years? And if so, and it may be that, it may be not, maybe that I'm just longer in the tooth than you. And if so, you know, how do you talk to people about how they can sort of resolve those things? They can't tell the other parent, don't buy this or don't buy that necessarily. So how do you advise folks who are in that circumstance, either on both sides of the financial continuum?
Yeah, so I have actually had this exact issue on both sides. There's a tendency for the more affluent party to, as you say, shower gifts. Generally speaking, whether it's right or wrong, but generally speaking, I found that the party that's more affluent seems to have less custody time. So they use that affluence to buy affection. And that's usually closer to when an agreement is signed as opposed to later. Early on in the process, they think, well, geez, I'm just going to buy each kid their own Xbox or PlayStation, and they'll die to be in the house with me as opposed to the other party. But crucially, I think it's an important discussion to, again, understand the values of the kids, understand the values of the parties, that including the values that you try to instill before you separated. Those don't go away because the kids still have those values. They're still looking to those values that you tried to foster early on. And so you don't want to discard those just because you and your spouse separated, right? And so it's about understanding that. And then for the spouse that maybe doesn't have as much means, I've talked to and counseled people that break away mentally from the idea that you need to give the kid a material item. Why don't you say, you know what, your gift this year, what I'm going to do, I'm bringing you to this, it's going to be a you and me special time. We're going to, you know, a museum. Let's say if money is real tight, there's plenty of free options that you can go to. And if maybe instead of buying the device, you want to spend, you know, a couple $100 and you take them on a trip to Manhattan, you know, those experiences, stuff like that is what embeds in the kid's mind is, again, forming those memories.
I think that's a really great point to make. Our brains don't develop until we're, as my wife has told me, I think until you're 24, 25 years old. So what memories do you have from your childhood? Do you remember getting that iPad when you were 9? Or do you remember when dad or mom took me to downtown to see whatever exhibit it might have been? Or we got on the train and we took the train up to New York for the day and walked around and saw Times Square and saw the tree and some of the parade. And those are the things that you remember. I tell parents all the time, just what you just talked about, think about what you remember from when you were a kid. What do you remember? Do you remember the gifts that you got? Most people would say, maybe I remember when I got a bike. But I do remember when my dad took me here, my mom took me here. I think that's a great point to make. So what I want to do to wrap things up, Chris, is to ask you to bullet point a couple of really important takeaways for people who are in this circumstance to remember as they go forward and as they look to plan for future years.
Yeah, sure. Perfect. Communication, number one. And it might be even the most important. Communication is key. Communicate to your co-parent. Make sure that you understand timelines. Make sure you understand expectations and make sure you're respecting the other party in your communications. Number two, honor existing traditions to the extent appropriate and look to create new traditions. Look to create new memories for your kids. That is what's going to help those kids adapt to this new reality. Number three, maintain flexibility, cooperation. You know, that is so key to ensuring that your children are adapting well and they're enjoying their holidays. Because the last thing you want to do is have a flashpoint and you see red and blue flashing lights outside the house because you just can't get out of your own way and you make it about you and the fight with your ex or your spouse instead of thinking about the kids. And then you have just made such a damning memory in these kids' minds. So that is, you need to avoid it at all costs.
I think those are very helpful. And folks, you should listen to this part again and take notes. I would add two things to that, just sort of general type thoughts. One is to assume good intentions. And that is, what I mean is assume that your co-parent is, that whatever they said, whatever they're doing, assume that it comes from a good place and not a place of conflict. And secondly, particularly this time of year, give some grace to people. Give some grace to your co-parent. Most importantly, give grace to your children, right? And put others' feelings before yours, particularly those people that you brought into this planet or adopted from somewhere. Give grace to everyone else and take a moment. Chris, as always, it's been a great conversation. It's turned into the last few months is that we are the co-hosts and just sort of having these great conversations. I really appreciate you taking the time. And I do want people to hear from you, although it'll be in the show notes. How do they get hold of you, particularly this time of year when something might, and Thanksgiving is just around the corner, a few days away, but you have the winter break coming up. How would folks get a hold of you to talk about this or anything else relative to separation and divorce?
Yeah, give me a call, 240-399-7881. You can get me direct through that number and we can talk about all your concerns or how you want to establish new traditions for your kids and whether that's appropriate. I'm happy to take the calls.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. And as always, thank you folks for listening. We will be back next time on JGL Law for You.